sure.
Okay. Item number four is the... No, we would not close the cases if you directed us to do otherwise, but otherwise we'll proceed with closing, yeah. Item number four is our standing status report on our perchlorate cases, plural. And I believe the only site where we're going to be providing a staff presentation is on the Olin site. Have I got that right? We don't have a presentation on the other sites.
That is correct.
Okay, thank you. And timing-wise, our combined staff presentation is probably going to take more than 20 minutes, and we have a representative from the Santa Clara Valley Water District, Rosemary Kamei, who has to leave before then in order to catch a flight. So we are going to have her go ahead and go a little bit out of sequence and provide her requested 5 minutes of comment on this item at this time. And then we'll go to the staff presentation.
Good afternoon. My name is Rosemary Kamei, and I'm a district director at the Santa Clara Valley Water District, representing the southern portion of Santa Clara County, and I'm a resident of Morgan Hill for 23 years, so I live in this area. I thank you so much for the opportunity to speak to you today. I also thank you for allowing me to make my presentation before I have to take the flight. One of the things that I'd like to do is just very briefly touch on some of the points that we expressed in our letter of August 28th that we sent to Mr. Briggs on our comments regarding the Olin report. We really urge the Central Coast Board to reject Olin's cleanup feasibility study report. The board must uphold the anti-degradation provisions of the state law and really require Olin to come back with a true cleanup plan to restore the groundwater basin to the condition it was before the contamination. One of the things that we have been doing collaboratively is really to work on ensuring that the cleanup gets done and gets done in a manner that is acceptable in terms of this anti-degradation policy. Olin also was supposed to bring back a feasibility report to show how the basin can be cleaned up. The fact of the matter is that they came back with an infeasibility report, so that's a concern to us. Santa Clara County is really unique in this region in that half of our water is from the groundwater basin, so it's critically important to us. We work so hard to aggressively protect it. It's even more important in the southern part of the county where groundwater is a primary source of water. And, you know, Olin's wait and hope approach really is too risky and not acceptable. California water law requires that polluters clean up their own mess, and that means that it be cleaned up the way it was cleaned up to the level of the way it was before. Olin really has failed to even determine how much perchlorate was in the groundwater before the contamination. One of the things that I'd like to emphasize is that the Water District has successfully held other groundwater polluters accountable in cases that were far more difficult to resolve, for example, Fairchild or IBM. And that's because failure really is not an option. Our groundwater basin is essential to maintain a reliable supply for the county, now and in the future. And one of the things that we did was really work together with the responsible party to come up with a way of doing the cleanup. And we have the experience to be able to help out in that. The cleanup to background level is not only required, it is feasible. Technology has shown that it can be done. Olin chose really to ignore it and to ignore the work that was done with some of the perchlorate working group and what we developed in 2003 and 2004. Olin's delays in providing an acceptable plan to clean up the contamination really prevents the district from developing plans and using federal funds in a way that will complement Olin's effort. Olin's delay in submitting a variable plan could therefore jeopardize EPA grant funding for projects to improve water supply reliability in the Yagas groundwater basin. So with these points, we have submitted our letter, and it's a little bit more detailed there. I'd like to ask if you would have any questions.
Any board questions? No questions. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you. And thank you for the opportunity to be here today.
You have a minute and a half. Are you sure there isn't anything else that you want
to talk about? You know, I believe in brevity, and I think that what I highlighted really were the points of how we can help. We've done a lot to work with the community, to work with the city, the county, the district. I think that we offer ourselves in terms of being able to work with Olin to really do the cleanup. And so I ask this board to please reject their report and have them come back with something that's actually feasible. And I think that we're all willing to work to make it happen. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hope your flight goes well. Okay, now we'll go back to start with our staff presentation. And we have, as you can see up on the board here, we'll start off with Hector Hernandez, and then we have Taya Tryon of our staff making a presentation. Additionally, we asked Tom Moore with the Santa Clara Valley Water District to give a 10-minute presentation specifically focusing on the forensic work that the district is and Olin are cooperating on. So that will actually follow as kind of a segment of our staff presentation. And then just to let the board members know what to expect after that, the chair has received requests for Olin to speak for 5 minutes and for the city of Morgan Hill to speak for 5 minutes, and the chair has granted those requests. So that's what we have. And then, of course, we have other cards from other folks for 3 minutes. That's what we have on the docket. So with that, we will start with Hector Hernandez of our staff.
Thank you, Roger, for that introduction. Good morning. Good morning. I'm used to the morning board meetings. Good afternoon, Chairman Young, members of the board. My name is Hector Hernandez, staff engineer and project manager for the Olin cleanup case. My left is Taya Tryon, staff hydrogeologist, and Taya provides technical support for the Olin case as well. Today we'll present item number four, as Mr. Briggs pointed out. This is the status report concerning perchlorate sites in our region, but specifically the Olin cleanup case. The staff report, which you should have in front of you, provides a comprehensive overview of the cleanup activities associated with the Olin site and provides a status update on the most significant developments of the cleanup case since the May 12th board meeting, which is the last time that we gave a brief presentation on this case. Along with the staff report, you'll find a supplemental package. It's normally a supplemental page, but in this case, there's a lot of material that was submitted after the staff report was sent out to the board members. The supplemental package includes, well, at first, it provides the most recent information concerning the Olin's termination of bottled water service. It provides updated information concerning a mushroom farm that we are currently investigating. It also presents perchlorate data collected from the Anderson Reservoir. There's also a minor correction to page 6 of the staff report per the request of the City of Morgan Hill. The informational material that was provided to the board includes 11 submittals from the City of Morgan Hill, 3 submittals from Olin, and 2 submittals from Santa Clara Valley Water District. Due to the extensive amount of material that was received, staff provided most of these submittals to the board electronically via email approximately 2 weeks ago in advance of this meeting. It is, as Mr. Briggs mentioned, City of Morgan Hill representatives, Olin representatives, and representatives of the Water District will be addressing the board after our brief presentation. At this time, we'll provide a brief status update concerning the most significant developments since the May 12th board meeting. The most significant developments include the issuance of a cleanup feasibility study report by Olin. We'll give you provide a brief update on the bottled water termination issues. We'll update you on the northeast characterization, and we'll also provide a brief update on other potential sources. Before we go on, I will like to address the feasibility study report briefly. As Ms. Kamei mentioned, we received a feasibility study report from Olin as required by our existing cleanup order for that particular case. Currently, the cleanup feasibility study report is under review. Staff anticipates formal comments will go out within the next few days. Written comments have been provided by the City of Morgan Hill and by the Water District. Most recently, we also received verbal comments from the PCAG committee, which is a perchlorate working group out of the San Martin area. We received comments from them concerning this particular report. Staff intends to consider all pertinent comments and incorporate them as appropriate as part of its comments to Olin. In general, it is staff's objective to ensure that the feasibility study report complies fully with the conditions of the cleanup order, and that the establishment of a cleanup level for the Yaga subbasin is in strict conformance with the California Water Code and with State Board Resolution 9249, which incorporates the non-degradation policy, or the State of California's non-degradation policy. As indicated in the staff report, staff intends to prepare a cleanup order which includes a cleanup schedule and an appropriate cleanup level for perchlorate as soon as possible. However, due to scheduling, public notice requirements, planning purposes, staff anticipates the earliest possible date that a cleanup order may be prepared and presented to the board for consideration would be the early part of 2007, assuming that the board holds a hearing on that order. Well, before we proceed, let's go to the next one. Before we proceed with the other updates, I'd like to orient everyone on the site location and where everything is located relative to the site. The figure here shows the Olin site on top. Next to the site is Morgan Hill. Well, actually, the site is located within the Morgan Hill city boundaries. It's the north arrow indicating the that direction is north. San Martin, it's an unincorporated area, is here. City of Gilroy is down here. Freeway 101 traverses the through the plume. Let's see, make sure I don't miss anything here. The closed circles on the map represent wells in this area. There's a bunch of dots all over the map. These are water supply wells. The shaded areas represent Olin's interpretation of the extent of perchlorate detected within the intermediate aquifer zone. And this figure, by the way, was presented in Olin's first quarter 2006 monitoring report. The different colors here represent the level of concentration of perchlorate in groundwater within the intermediate zone. Green represents concentrations of perchlorate between 4 and 6. Yellow are concentrations between 6.1 and 11. Orange is 11.1 to 24.5, and that's micrograms per liter, by the way. And the red represents concentrations above 24.6 micrograms per liter. The plume extends approximately 10 miles from the site location down to the furthest southern detection of perchlorate or furthest monitoring point where perchlorate has been detected. It's about approximately 10 miles. Well, next I'll give you a brief update on the bottled water termination, but first to begin with, I'd like to update or refresh everybody's mind on how we got to this point of terminating bottled water service for affected well owners. The State Water Board Order WQ 2005-007 was adopted by the State Board May 19, 2005. The order requires Olin to supply uninterrupted replacement water service to users of private domestic wells in which perchloric concentrations are detected above 6 micrograms per liter. The order also allows Olin to stop supplying interim uninterrupted water service to individual well owners whose concentrations are below 6. The order allows Olin to stop supplying interim uninterrupted water service to individual well owners if four prospective quarters of monitoring data show concentrations below 6 micrograms per liter. Repeated myself there. The order also provides specific monitoring requirements for wells subject to replacement water. These monitoring requirements address conditions under which Olin may discontinue monitoring. Now, in late June 2006, Olin initiated a phased termination of bottled water service for those wells that meet the State Board criteria. Olin terminated bottled water service for a total of 459 wells. Based on data provided to staff by Olin, staff determined and concurred that 400 of those 19 wells staff concurred with 419 of those terminations. Therefore, Olin or Water Board staff agreed that Olin may terminate bottled water service for 419 wells. However, staff did not agree with the termination for 40 wells because staff determined that 40 wells did not meet the acceptable quality assurance quality control validation procedures. Although Olin disagreed with staff's determination, Olin proceeded to conduct additional sampling, and that was done in July of this year. Based on the additional sampling results, staff has determined that 31 of the 4 wells now meet State Board criteria for terminating bottled water service. We have also determined that 40 of those wells, that 4 of the 40 wells require one additional sampling before a determination can be made as to whether bottled water service should be terminated or not. 5 of the wells tested above the 6 microgram per liter concentration. Therefore, staff's position is that replacement water must be reinstated for these 5 wells immediately. Staff continues to evaluate analytical data as it is presented by Olin for any additional wells that may be terminated in the future. It is our understanding that there were a total of 638 wells receiving free bottled water service prior to the implementing any of these terminations. Currently, there's approximately 200 wells that continue to receive free bottled water service.
Before you switch slides, what was the nature of the unacceptable QAQC validation procedures? What happened?
That's right.
During laboratory validation procedures, they have several checks within to analyze the water quality sample or the groundwater sample. And even though the machines appeared to run fine, there was some sample matrix interference possibilities. So what that means is that the sample results were flagged, even though they were probably fine. There was a chance that there was some sample matrix interference, such as other ions that are naturally present in groundwater, that may have caused that sample result to be lower than it was or higher than it was reported. So just to be conservative, we determined that we weren't going to accept some of these samples that had matrix spike recoveries a lot lower than the acceptable range.
Was this something that could have occurred in previous samplings?
Most of the matrix spike recoveries that were outside of the acceptable range for the method pretty well occurred within the third quarter of 2005. The last two quarters, first quarter 2006, second quarter of 2006, were fine.
Staff reviewed all of the analytical data for each of these wells for the four prospective quarters, and based on our review, we determined that only 40 of these wells did not meet that quality assurance, quality control, validation procedures.
Okay.
But was your question about other data for plume characterization?
No, not necessarily plume characterization, but I'd like to know that all of the data that we're relying upon to allow the termination of bottled water supply, that there isn't any other corrupted data.
No, that's why
being relied upon.
That's why we looked at every single lab report, every single little data sheet, and there was over 2,000 data sheet or data packages that we reviewed.
Okay. I take it we don't do any duplicate testing.
There's a large quality assurance, quality control program that Olin implements, and a lot of them duplicate samples are within 10%. All of those fall within the right ranges. It just happened to be that these samples, even though all the control limits seem to be fine, just there was some interference with the sample matrices that may have caused the sample to be biased low for 40 of those wells.
How are the duplicates handled? Is Olin running those through the same lab?
Yes.
Any other questions on this slide?
I'm not on this slide, but the previous one, the map, if you want to flip that back. And in the supplemental sheets that were submitted, you mentioned two other, or actually five mushroom facilities. Can you show me on the map where those are located? Are they scattered throughout that whole basin?
One mushroom farm is located approximately 2,000 feet north of the Nordstrom well, or approximately 6,000 feet. It's near Diana number 3. And all the other ones are south, the Olin site on top of the plume.
Okay.
So this is a much closer view with the tenant well down at the bottom and the site down the very bottom there.
Do they use city water, or do they pump, or where is the perchlorate coming from? Is it?
It's from irrigation wells that are on site.
Irrigation wells that are on site.
Or
so they're
wells.
Pumping a well, pumping mm-hmm. from the same aquifer that mm-hmm. the plume is in.
Mm-hmm.
The second question is, you also mentioned in this report Anderson Reservoir, which can you flip your other slide back and show us where Anna. I know where Anderson, but
Thea is going to address the other potential sources. After.
Detail.
Well, I didn't want to lose that map because that.
I have a better map.
Yeah, better map.
Okay, I'll hold my question to that.
Okay, well then I'll proceed and then we can follow up with the questions and answers. Okay, this figure shows more detail on the area that we refer to as the north. To the area northeast of the Olin site, and I know if you've had a chance to review the staff report and the multiple submittals, there's a lot of mention about the area northeast of the site. Well, this is the area known as referred to as the area northeast of the site. Have this is a close-up view of the site and the area immediately northeast of the site. Let me just point out some features here to kind of orient everyone on what we're seeing here. The larger red outline is referred to as the northeast study area. That's right here. These red dots are City of Morgan Hill, some of the City of Morgan Hill water supply wells. The blue triangles show the location of these blue triangles here, show the location of multi-level monitoring wells that were installed by Olin in 2005. Each multi-level well has depth discrete screen intervals in the shallow, intermediate, and deep aquifer zones. That's these four triangles here. The blue line represents this blue line here crosses through the site, represents the Madrone Channel, which is a percolation or recharge pond that is managed by the Santa Clara Valley Water District. The smaller circles, these white circles, represent private wells. All these wells here are private wells. The circles in blue are wells, private wells that were sampled by Olin during the fourth quarter, the first quarter of 2006. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay. Well, now I'm going to focus in on the area immediately northeast of the site. That's this area encompassing the MP, PZ1, PZ2, and PZ4 multi-level well locations. Go on to the next one. Okay. Okay, again, the blue triangles here are the multi-level wells that I mentioned in the previous slide. The orange circles are locations of cone penetrometer test borings. Those are referred to as CPT borings. The distance between the site, the eastern boundary of the site, and the furthest CPT boring is approximately 2,000 feet. Tennant Avenue runs along here, and Freeway 101 crosses at the right-hand side. As discussed in the staff report, Olin has installed 11 CPT borings immediately north of Tennant Avenue and east of the site. It's this area here. The borings were installed to characterize groundwater conditions within the intermediate aquifer zone in this area. Based on the groundwater data presented in Olin's characterization report and the first quarter 2006 monitoring report, Olin has been required by the Water Board to perform additional characterization activities to fully characterize the lateral and vertical extent of perchlorate impacts within the intermediate and deeper aquifer zones in this area. Olin is required to continue monitoring the multi-level wells for perchlorate, and this is something that was not previously required by the Water Board. So from now on, Olin is required to continue monitoring these wells and the other well that's not shown on this slide. Olin is also required to submit a work plan by September 29th. The required work plan must discuss the results of the sampling conducted after these CPT borings were installed. I believe that the results are pending, but I believe that Olin's consultant may have already collected the data, and that's being put together and will be included in the September 29th report. Nonetheless, the Water Board required Olin to provide that information in that work plan. The work plan must also provide recommendations for additional CPT borings and or permanent monitoring wells as deemed necessary and appropriate. Olin is also required to include a proposed monitoring schedule for any permanent wells that they may install in this area. Based on the results of the additional characterization activities that are being required, staff will determine whether and to what extent any additional work is necessary. It is staff's staff's position at this point that the required characterization activities are progressing at a reasonable pace. Characterization of perchlorate detections must follow a stepwise approach, similarly to the approach being implemented for the plume to the south of the site, which is down to the south. Therefore, at this time, staff does not recommend the issuance of a cleanup order specific to this area. The area, by this area, I mean the area northeast of the Olin site. It is staff's position that if a cleanup order were to be issued at this time, such cleanup would require characterization activities similar to those being currently being implemented by Olin and required by the Water Board. At this time, TEA will provide a brief update concerning the other potential sources and discuss information submitted by the City of Morgan Hill.
Thanks, Hector. The City of Morgan Hill recently submitted some historic JFLAG perchloric concentration data for some of their municipal supply wells that are located northeast of the Olin site. And what it means when something is JFLAG is it means that it is a statistically determined or estimated concentration that is in between the method detection limit and the practical quantitation limit. The method detection limit is usually 1.2 to 1.4 micrograms per liter for EPA method 314.0, which is usually used to analyze for perchlorate. And it is the lowest concentration of perchlorate that can be detected by the laboratory instrument with a 99% confidence that it's greater than zero, but it's still a statistical estimate. The practical quantitation limit is usually around 4 micrograms per liter, and it's also usually the reporting limit. And that is the lowest concentration an instrument can quantify the actual value of perchlorate. And basically what this means is that when something is J-flagged, that means it's somewhere in between the method detection limit and the reporting limit or the practical quantitation limit where a laboratory running a sample is 99% confident that that is the number in the groundwater sample and that perchlorate is present and the value is somewhere around above 4 or whatever the result is reported. When something is less than 4 and above the method detection limit, it is an estimate, a statistical estimate. So whether it's 2.1, 3.1, it's a guess. There's a 99% confidence that it is there and above 0, but what exactly the value is not clear. But once you get above 4, it's a lot more clear. So in accordance with the Department of Health Services, the City of Morgan Hill typically reports their concentrations in their municipal supply wells at concentrations above 4 micrograms per liter. So when the City of Morgan Hill posts results that says it's non-detect, that means it's non-detect above 4 micrograms per liter, but that doesn't necessarily mean that there's no perchlorate present in the water. So that is the reason why we asked the City of Morgan Hill to provide us with J-flagged or estimated data just to see if there was actually perchlorate present in their municipal supply wells that are located northeast of the Olin site. This figure shows the results, the J-flag results for the City of Morgan Hill municipal supply wells located northeast of the Olin site during March of 2006. The Condit well had concentrations that were less than the method detection limit of 1.3, so it was non-detect. The San Pedro well had a concentration of perchlorate around 1.41. Nordstrom well had a concentration of 1.73, and the Dunn number 1 well, which is located here, had a concentration less than the method detection limit. Concentrations of perchlorate beneath the Olin site in the deep aquifer range between 3.8 to 20 micrograms per liter during the first quarter of 2006. And the Tennant well, which is located closest to the Olin site, averaged a concentration of 5 micrograms per liter during March of 2006. I've also posted the concentration data for the multi-level wells that were installed by Olin in 2005. And the concentrations that are shown here beside the multi-level wells are the concentrations for those depth discrete intervals that only intercept the deep aquifer. As you can see, most of the concentrations are less than 4 micrograms per liter, with the exception of the lowest screen interval at MP3, which has a 4.4, a 4.0 at this location, and a 4.0 and a 4.2 in the upper portion of the deep aquifer at the well closest to the Olin site. Now let's switch gears and talk about Mr. Jeffrey's favorite topic is the other potential sources of perchlorate that may be present in the Yaga Subbasin or contributing to groundwater in the Yaga Subbasin. As requested by Chairman Young during the May board meeting, he wanted an update and an overview of the other potential sources of perchlorate. And the first other potential source is sodium hypochlorite, which is also known as liquid bleach. Perchlorate forms as an impurity in liquid bleach, and the Massachusetts Department of Environmental Protection has detected concentrations up to 8,000 micrograms per liter in liquid bleach. Olin themselves have detected concentrations up to 4,000 micrograms per liter in bleach that they purchased from the Morgan Hill area. Bleach is used to disinfect municipal and domestic supply wells to sanitize the well, and it's also used at food processing facilities to disinfect equipment that comes in contact with food products, workers' shoes, etc., and food processing facilities such as mushroom farms or wineries. And because bleach is used at food processing facilities such as mushroom farms to disinfect growing rooms and equipment, and wastewater is generated at the mushroom farms, Water Board staff collected wastewater samples in March of 2006 from five mushroom farms located in the Morgan Hill and the Gilroy area to determine whether perchlorate was present in their waste stream. We determined that three of the five mushroom farms had concentrations of perchlorate in their wastewater detected up to 39 micrograms per liter. And the mushroom farm that's located 2,000 feet north of Nordstrom Well in particular had 17 micrograms per liter in the wastewater. And because of its proximity to the Nordstrom Well and because it's not over top of the Olin plume, we decided that, or we directed the owner of this mushroom farm to collect first encountered groundwater samples to see if perchlorate from the wastewater pond had reached groundwater. And we expect those results to come in at the end of September. So at this point, we're not sure whether the perchlorate that's detected in the wastewater has actually made it to groundwater. Another potential source of perchlorate is for the area northeast of the Olin site is the release of ammonium perchlorate from a former rocket motor manufacturing facility into Anderson Reservoir. This facility is the United Technologies Corporation, or UTC, facility, which is located approximately 5 miles northeast of the Morgan Hill area. This facility is regulated by the San Francisco Bay Regional Water Board, and it's been in operation from 1959 until 2003. Perchlorate concentrations up to 1 million micrograms per liter have been detected in groundwater at this facility, and it is located just up gradient of the Anderson Reservoir, which the northern tip of Anderson Reservoir is right here. Las Animas Creek runs through the UTC site, and concentrations of perchlorate have been detected in this creek, and not necessarily large concentrations have been detected past the UTC site, but Santa Clara Valley Water District does surface water sampling in Anderson Reservoir at the Las Animas surface water sampling location, down gradient of the UTC site. And they've been sampling that surface water at that location since 1989 on a monthly basis. And concentrations were reported above the reporting limit of, or non-detect above the reporting limit of 4 micrograms per liter. So we asked the Santa Clara Valley Water District to provide us with JFLAG data to see if there was presence of perchlorate in their surface water samples. And it was determined that out of 3 of the 70 samples that they've collected since January of 2000, that there was the presence of perchlorate in Anderson Reservoir between 2 and 4 micrograms per liter. And why this is important is because Anderson Reservoir water was used to fill the Main Avenue ponds from 1955 until 1987. to recharge the Yaga sub-basin, and from 1975 until 1987, Anderson Reservoir water was used to recharge the Madrone channel ponds. And these ponds are both located northeast of the Olin site. Whether perchlorate entered the recharge ponds during that time, we're not sure, because perchlorate's present in the Yaga sub-basin. What the source is a very difficult task to determine. But I'll get to that, and Tom's going to get to that. Tom Moore from the Water District is going to get to that. Fertilizer is another potential source of perchlorate. Agricultural fertilizers have been studied by many in academia, and it's been determined that Chilean sodium nitrate fertilizer, also known as bulldog soda fertilizer, has high levels of perchlorate in it. Approximately between 1923 to 1998, almost 500,000 tons of this fertilizer was imported to California. Whether it was used at large quantities in the Morgan Hill area, we don't know. It has been reported that maybe the soil types in the Morgan Hill area would not be suitable for this type of fertilizer. But whether the fertilizer has contributed to groundwater is not clear or investigated. Roadside flares could also be another potential source of perchlorate. Olin reported concentrations up to 32 micrograms per liter on ponded surface water near a roadway or an intersection where accidents had occurred. So whether perchlorate from these surf ponded waters beside the road could enter groundwater has not been investigated. The Department of Environmental Protection has also determined that fireworks can contaminate groundwater or public supply wells. We have not seen any investigations done to date whether fireworks in the Morgan Hill area have contaminated surface water or groundwater. One thing I did forget to mention is some studies that Olin had presented in the March 2006 characterization report, where they went to a mushroom farm located in the Gilroy area, and they evaluated the groundwater from an irrigation well, and concentrations up to 190 micrograms per liter of perchlorate were detected in this irrigation well, and wells surrounding the area were around 6 micrograms per liter. And Olin suggests that the reason for the elevated concentrations of the perchlorate in this irrigation well at this mushroom farm in Gilroy is more than likely due to a hypochlorinator that's used at the wellhead, which basically small amounts of liquid bleach or bleach gets introduced into the well to disinfect the well and keep the water clean. Another study that Olin did on their site for a newly installed injection well that they installed was they added 1.5 gallons of household bleach, which had a concentration of 280 micrograms per liter, to a well. And before the disinfection procedure, no perchlorate was detected in the groundwater or in the well water. After they added the 1.5 gallons of bleach, they found concentrations up to 7.5 micrograms per liter 1 hour after disinfection. And that was less than 4 micrograms per liter 24 hours after the injection, which suggests that there might be some short-term release of perchlorate during well disinfection procedures. But whether bleach, UTC, fertilizer, roadside flares are the source for any of the perchlorate found in the Yaga sub-basin today is a very, very difficult task. And the best method, I personally think, is for evaluating this is through forensic chemistry. And whether if we determine responsible parties for perchlorate to the Yaga sub-basin from these other potential sources, it's unlikely that they will be held as responsible parties or added as responsible parties to the Olin cleanup case or the Olin cleanup and abatement order. But where this is very important is to determine what the background concentration of perchlorate is in the Yaga sub-basin or portions thereof. So as I mentioned, forensic chemistry is really the best way to evaluate whether there is a background concentration of perchlorate and if it's possible to identify what the source of that perchlorate is from the concentrations that or for the perchlorate that's present in the groundwater today that we collect today. And Tom Moore, who's perchlorate project manager with the Santa Clara Valley Water District, is here today to give a brief presentation on the exciting work that they're doing on the forensic chemistry, which is a very innovative technique for evaluating background concentrations.
Has that been successfully used elsewhere?
The forensic chemistry?
Yeah, for perchlorate.
Well, you know, I'm going to let Tom Moore address that. He's the expert in that. Did I answer your questions?
My other favorite locations.
Hey, did you put the list back up there?
Your other favorite potential sources.
Well, I didn't know I had any, but
no,
I guess
teasing.
I do now. But you pretty much answered the second part of my question that I asked originally was Anderson Reservoir, and I was going to ask the percolation area basin, which is Yagas sub-basin, and how that affect or would affect the plume. And, of course, you addressed mushrooms, but there are other processing plants in Gilroy, for instance, ConAgra, which is a large processing plant there, and they also process the waste, which they spread over agriculture fields. And I was wondering, have you investigated that as well?
Well, the first step was to find out from the data from the mushroom farmer to see if it has encountered groundwater. And also, it's our position that contributions from mushroom farmers, wineries, other food processing facilities is more likely going to be pretty localized in relation to the Olin plume as a whole. So they'll probably be dealt with separately. And it may be important for Olin to work on that just to establish background levels if those food processing facilities are contributing or not. But in March of 2006 was the first time we actually discovered that, you know, perchlorate is present from probably bleach in the waste stream at food processing facilities.
Okay.
Tom, from the Water District might get to this, but is there any role for isotope tracing?
Yes, there's a lot of isotope work that's going to be done.
And will he be talking about that, or can you address it? Okay.
Yes,
thanks.
He's going to be talking about it.
Mr. Shallcross.
Yeah, I think this is a question for Mr. Hernandez. You were saying that we really don't have the information, or staff wasn't recommending bringing a cleanup order right now. And I was just wondering, do you have any idea when we will have enough information to make that decision of whether a cleanup order is appropriate or not?
Well, based on the current characterization activities that are being implemented by Olin and required as required by the Water Board, our position is that our resources are best spent addressing the plume to the south, which is where the majority of the highest concentrations are, the majority of impacted or affected persons. And we believe that so long as characterization is proceeding or progressing at a reasonable pace, mm-hmm. there's no reason to shift direction and issue an order specific to. I mean, we can do that at any time. I think our original order specifically says that Water Board staff will evaluate the situation, and if the need for a specific cleanup order addressing the Northeast is necessary, we would issue one. And we could certainly do that, but our position looking at this whole situation at this point is that even if we were to issue a specific order for the Northeast, it would not require anything more than what is currently being required.
Okay, so this is a sort of a resources and strategic decision, not one from lack of information.
Well, and the other issue that we have considered is that we are very close to having a groundwater cleanup level for perchlorate, or within the Yagasal Basin. That cleanup order, whatever that number ends up being, is going to apply for the entire Yagasal Basin. So depending on what that concentration is, it will affect how we proceed with cleanup throughout the entire basin.
Okay, thanks.
Well, and part of that, too, is part of investigating the southeast, right? Because if Olin is the source to the northeast, there's a leading edge of the plume, and it's all one plume. So what they're doing now is characterizing that whole plume. It doesn't stop at Tennant Avenue.
That's correct.
Just out of curiosity, how would one clean up a plume that size? What would be the most practical way to do it?
Oh, gosh,
that's a very tough question.
But that's what the feasibility study.
That's what the feasibility study is supposed to do, and you know, what technologies are feasible for implementation. I mean, there technologies are available, current technologies, ion exchange, groundwater extraction, and reinjection are a big possibility and will likely be required for much of the plume. But it's a very tough question because it is a big plume. We're dealing with a close to 10-mile long plume, which is very unusual. Usually, you talk about a plume that's in the order of a tenth of that size at most. So I think a combination of technologies may be appropriate. I don't know. That's something that we have asked Olin to look into and propose. They have proposed some specific, well, not very specific, but they have proposed some remedies which they are looking into. We're hoping that that's something that they will evaluate very thoroughly, and we can have a good idea of whether or not what they propose is appropriate for.
With their feasibility study, I take it, addresses these issues?
Yes.
And when will you complete review of their report?
I anticipate that our review will be completed in the next few days. A letter, after completion of my comments, there will be internal review of those comments. So I would say in the next 2 weeks or so, a letter will be going out and to Olin on what we think about their feasibility study report.
Okay. But it seems to me that you're going to be waiting anyway for the forensic study to be completed. No?
Okay. Well, that's one thing that...
Not in terms of finishing your review of the report, but deciding to how to issue a cleanup and abatement order, if that's the way you're going to go.
Not necessarily.
Okay.
I mean, in accordance with the cleanup process that Olin is required to implement, first and foremost, a background level needs to be established. They need to determine what the background concentration of perchlorate is within the Yagasal Basin. If Olin believes that there is a natural concentration of perchlorate or anthropogenic concentration of perchlorate, then they need to justify that, present the data or evidence to support their contention that there is a level of perchlorate already in the Yagasal Basin. Once they do that, then according to the cleanup process, the goal is to achieve that concentration. Let's say, for instance, that the background level is determined to be 1, just as an example. Well, then the goal must be to achieve 1 microgram per liter. And that's where the feasibility comes in. So in evaluating what technologies or what remedy is appropriate for that cleanup, they must determine how the feasibility of implementing a specific remedial strategy to meet that objective. And that's where you can get to a point where they can, if they can justify something higher, a concentration greater than background as a cleanup level, but they have to submit the data to provide to support whatever cleanup level they believe they can attain. Yeah. Well, and unless they can do that, then staff's position will be that the background level will be the method detection limit for the analytical method that they're using currently, which is approximately 1.4, I believe, is the 1.4 micrograms per liter. So they have to establish background, and then they have to propose a cleanup level. And part of doing that is evaluating possible alternatives for attaining that that level. And that's where they go into economics, they go into available technologies. There's many considerations, especially with a plume this size. Mm-hmm. I mean, it may be feasible to implement a certain technology, but it may not be as feasible to implement it for the same technology for the entire plume. So there's a lot of variables, a lot of things that we need to still work out, and hopefully that'll come across very clear in our response to the feasibility study report.
Okay, Dr. Hunter.
Ms. Kamei mentioned delays that could cause them problems in terms of seeking grant funding from EPA. Is this are these delays something you can tell us about? Are they related to the process, or are they missing deadlines, or what's the story there? And what is her concern? How is her concern going to be dealt with in terms of time frame?
Well, I certainly can't speak for the Water District. Maybe staff from the Water District can address that specific question as far as what specific factors affect their potential for obtaining funding or EPA funding or so forth. But I believe that where Ms. Kamei was referring to is that the district's position that they believe that the report that was submitted by Olin is inadequate. So their position or their contention is that by submitting an inadequate report, in their opinion, is going to delay the project. So they kind of give me the sense that they believe it's some type of delay tactic to implement actual remediation. But that's the district's that's what I believe the district's opinion is. They can certainly address that specifically. I believe there's Water District staff in this room today.
Dr. Press.
Mr. Chair, it might be helpful to the board and maybe the public to get a sense of if and when the board will have an action item on this issue. Because there are a lot of people, there's a level of disagreement now that seems greater than, say, 6 months ago among the parties that commonly are involved on this item. So, and different parties are asking us to do different things. So I think it would be helpful to maybe Roger or you to comment on whether an action item is going to come before this board, whether you'd like it to, and when.
I can address that. First of all, normally with cleanup sites, we issue cleanup or abatement orders administratively, and the board doesn't take them up itself. However, we've decided quite some time ago with a site that affects so many people and does have such a diversity of opinion that it makes sense for that to be a board action item. And with our timing regard, as Hector was just talking about, getting our comments out on the cleanup report and possible revisions that might be required, and then looking at lead time that would be required for public comment on a proposed order that we would have to issue in draft, have a comment period, be able to get those comments. It would be very similar to our lead time for waste discharge requirements or a permit. So that's why we're saying that probably the earliest that we could have an item before you would be the first part of 2007, possibly the first meeting of the calendar year.
Well, we do have a board meeting up here in February or March.
Well, it depends on what you adopt tomorrow. Well, but that's a consideration.
Okay. Well, I think it's safe to say that we should turn a cleanup and abatement order into an action item for the board.
That's what we're assuming.
Right. Right. That's what I guess where I was headed more obliquely.
Right. Yeah, we decided that long ago that would be appropriate.
Right. Well, I think we would agree with that.
And, you know, maybe the thing to do when we discuss the schedule tomorrow is to take that into account. And as we've done this during this past calendar year, we've made adjustments in terms of the location of board meetings when necessary based on the item. But we have so many people who would be interested in that, you know, it really has to be a northern board meeting.
Okay. Mr. Shallcross.
Yeah. This report, again, that you're going to be commenting on the next couple of weeks, that's the feasibility study?
Yes.
And I'm a little confused how you can have a feasibility study without knowing the background amount of the perchlorate. It seems a little backwards to me, and maybe I'm confused about something, so maybe you can explain that.
Well, normally the background is assumed to be non-detect for most situations.
Okay.
You know, a non-naturally occurring constituent shouldn't be there, so therefore background is non-detect. So with this particular situation, Olin's contention is that there are anthropogenic sources contributing to the impacts, so they, off the bat, at the beginning of the report, they make the assumption, or they state, that the background is up to 4 micrograms per liter. So they initiate their report by saying that background is essentially 4, or up to 4, and therefore, you know, they base their feasibility study, the feasibility of cleaning up the groundwater contamination on that number.
Well, we could probably talk for a couple hours
right.
on that issue right
exactly.
there. So maybe we should stop right there on that. I see how it's going, and I'm sure all will be revealed. This is really disconcerting at this point.
Well, if that's how their report starts off, you know, I think that that's their assumption. And I hope that
those comments
will be getting back to them saying, assume that the background level is as you think it might be,
well,
non-detect, and then have them address feasibility based on that level.
Exactly. Olin assumes that that is the anthropogenic concentration of perchlorate in the Yaga subbasin, and they present some information to support their contention. Staff is reviewing those arguments and that supporting information, and that's going to be the focus of our response.
Well, I presented most of those today with the 190 detected in the mushroom farm
right.
as well.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Chairman, could I mention something on this discussion about background? We talked about this last week, and that is that just because there are other sources of perchlorate doesn't necessarily mean that is part of background. And I use the analogy to make it more simple, because here with this site, we have all these potential sources. We don't know how many of them are real or if they're contributing significant concentrations in certain areas. So if you look at it from a real simple standpoint, where you have two gas stations with leaks, and one plume up gradient has wandered down, or maybe it's a dry cleaner, has wandered down and has mixed with the down gradient gas station. The down gradient gas station can't say, look, there's 8 milligrams per liter of MTBE, that's background. We just say there's another source, and we'll deal with that. Now, as Teo was saying, it's probably going to be very difficult if there's some background, you know, not background, but noise level from flares or historic fertilizer use or something. We're probably not going to be able to identify a responsible party, but that doesn't necessarily mean that's background. It just means there's another source. So I think we have to separate out in our minds the difference between true background and other sources.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I'll tell you what I'm curious about. The dots on this map that are just black dots, that are outside the green plume area on either side, do those show hits of perchlorate, which are in that non-detect up to 4?
No, any dots where there are not shaded in any color would be non-detect below 4.
Below 4.
So there could be
there
some
could
J-flag
be.
Result,
that's
but
what I mean.
Those are not plotted on this figure.
Do you have that data? That data must exist, right?
Well, the data should exist. I mean, whether it was reported as a J-flag or not, or I mean, whether it was probably reported below 4.
It's shown in the tables, and a lot of them outside of this edge are non-detect below the method detection limits. There are some J-flags here and there, but typically consultants or for projects, they don't plot up things above the below the PQL because there is it is an estimated concentration. And
wouldn't that data be helpful in determining background levels? I mean, as you go further away from the plume, you should be getting into areas that you would think are not.
Well, I think
have not been impacted by this discharge.
Well, that's generally true, but not down in the, you know, where the predominant
yeah,
groundwater flow direction is going.
I mean,
but
side to side.
Well, and that's one of the things that the regulations require, and as far as how background should be established. I mean, I know that this forensic study that the water district is going to be conducting hopefully will provide some answers. It's not a sure thing that it will provide every answer or any answer for that matter, but there are other ways of establishing background, determining what background is. You know, placing wells into different aquifer zones in background areas where there aren't any, or where you wouldn't expect any concentrations of perchlorate to be, and based on that data, determine you know, figure out what the true background is for that basin.
And that's a really good point, and I think that's where the less than 4 comes from, where they start that in their feasibility study. Olin proposed it's less than 4 because, for example, they've looked at maps like these where here's the Olin site right here, and from historic data or data from other sources, there's, for example, this well in the middle of nowhere that more than likely is not influenced by the Olin and plume, and it has a concentration of perchlorate between 4 and 9.9. It was, as far as I know, Tom Moore could probably confirm this, is that it was a one-time hit. It wasn't confirmed. Same with here, which is in the Coyote Valley. It was a hit. There's some estimated concentrations of perchlorate that have been detected in this area over here, so there's questions. There's definitely, you know, questions is what background is.
Okay. Have you guys completed your presentation?
Yes.
Of material? Okay. So we're going to be seeing, I guess, as part of just this continual update, staff's analysis of the feasibility report.
Oh, yes, most definitely. Yeah.
Well, we'll mail that, assuming our timing is correct here, we'll mail that to the board as soon as it's done.
Okay. Dr. Press, another question?
Yeah, I guess this is just another way of phrasing what the chair raised. This alternative sources that you describe possibly could be very widespread. They could, many, many different places could have perchlorate if those are significant sources. And so it would be, I think, interesting and valuable to know from very far away from the plume. I mean, that's what the side to side, or even maybe other valleys, other parts of the state, other studies done throughout the country, to detect what the background, if you will, pulse of anthropogenic perchlorate not from this kind of site consists of. So I hope that that's part of the forensic chemistry or part of the staff's review, because that would seem to corroborate the Olin claim or not. I mean, that's we need to see something like that.
Move on to the district?
Yes.
Okay.
Let's move on to the district. Tom Moore.
Do you want the podium or do you want to sit here?
Podium, if you don't mind advancing the slides.
No, I don't mind.
On the desktop.
Good afternoon, Chair.